Hello, comic creators. Welcome back to the Comics Connection podcast, a podcast where we discuss the business, legal, and creative side of being a comic book creator. I'm Gamal. The gentleman next to me is Andy, and we are here to talk about the future. Andy, last week or early this week, I guess Brian Hibbs came out with the 21st book scan analysis numbers that he runs to kind of determine where the industry is going in terms of a specific distribution channel in comics, namely the bookstore market. And did you read that long, 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 long post?
I did. Also, it's worth noting that Brian Hibbs is a comic book retailer in retail store in San Francisco Bay Area. And so he comes at it from very much of retail.
Yes, and that's something that he points out in the post. He points it out several times just so that you understand where he's coming from when he's analyzing these numbers. Part of the reason he's analyzing the numbers is because, like we said in a podcast sometime last year, the industry doesn't have like standardization of like numbers of what's going on the way other industries might. So what Brian tries to do is give a picture of what's going on in bookstore distribution in the same way like Comic-Con tries to do for the direct market distribution. Now, there are there's a lot of data in that report, and there's going to be a link in the show notes. And I suggest if you are interested in the bookstore distribution channel and you'd like to see the trends and where things are going and who's actually important and who's not, spoiler, DC and Marvel in the bookstore chain are not that important. I suggest you go and read that post. But I would actually like to talk about a specific aspect of the post that I think is going to be relevant not only now, but in the future. One of the highlights of the post is that there are millions and millions of people who are young people who are currently reading things like Dogman and Diary of a Wimpy Kid and books along those lines. And one of the things, and it was just a kind of a footnote that Brian threw out, was that in about 10 to 15 years, all of those people are going to be adults. They are going to, by definition, stop reading Dogman and probably start reading something else. The reason that they're probably going to start reading something else is, like in any other type of medium, once you actually are introduced to it with like material specifically related to kids, you move into the more adult material. Now, comics historically has had a significant drop off between kids reading and adults reading because we had things like Seduction of the Innocent, which trickled into the comics code, which trickled into kids getting bullied, beat up, or otherwise discouraged from reading comics the older they get. But I think now we're in a situation where most of those things are not really the case anymore. So a lot of people who are reading comics now, and Dogman sold about 8.5 million copies last year alone, will actually be in the market for reading other types of comics. So if you're making other types of comics and you plan to be in it for the long haul, I think what I'd like to hear from you, Andy, is how do you think it's going to affect the market when you potentially have millions and millions of new readers, you know, entering into the market?
Yeah, well, I think, it's going to have a massive effect. I mean, not everybody reading, all of these really popular books for younger audiences are going to become adults who are still reading comics and graphic novels regularly. But one of the things that I think, there are a couple of things I think are interesting, is how many of those people that are essentially kids now are going to grow up with just a vastly different understanding of what comics are, how they're made, than what the current, 30s, people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, think of comics. Like, we all kind of grew up with it being more or less superheroes, and then we all work really hard to crack that open and have, mm-hmm. and get other genres to work. And it's been a very slow process, but it's been working. But what we're seeing is that with kids, you don't have to crack it open. You just present them with something, and if they like it, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's finally happening. And we're seeing the books that you mentioned, physical books, you know, the book scan report that hit the analysis on is physical comics, physical books that were sold. But then there's also a kind of a massive amount of readership that are reading digital only, like vertical scroll comics on websites, on apps, and things. And then you've got sort of the more old school people, and then you've also got manga, which is a very different form of storytelling, although manga is captured to some degree in book scan data because there's a lot of physical books. But you've got all of these readers that are growing up on different styles of comics, different genres of comics, and different ways that the comics are produced, that if they start to learn, if you're reading manga almost exclusively and you learn how comics are made, the way manga is made, that's different from the way American comics are made, that's different from the way Dog Man is made, which is one author. So it's going to drastically change the way comics are. And a lot of the graphic novels coming out of Scholastic or Random House or whatever that are commissioned by those larger publishers tend to be one or two creators only.
Mm-hmm.
And they're commissioning the entire graphic novel, not the, you know, not a mini series and that sort of stuff. So the traditional direct market model, I think, is going to shift. And I think it's already shifted. One of the things that the data points out, the two biggest takeaways for today rather than the future are you've got overall sales is not on shaky ground so much. Like they declined this year a little bit,
mm-hmm.
but what we're seeing is a consolidation of sales, right? Like you pointed out, Dogman sold 8.5 million copies.
Yep.
That means that there's 8.5 million copies of everything else that didn't sell, but sales are the same.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, there was Dogman last year, so that's not a great example. But you get the idea that what we're seeing is that the hits are bigger hits, and everything else is sort of diminishing in sales, which provides an opportunity, but it's also a little bit scary. And I think, you know, for me, I look at it and say there is a real chance and opportunity that this industry is going to expand in the mm-hmm. next 10 to 15 years. I think that is the case. But I think with that expansion, it will greatly change. The other big thing that's, you know, scary for old guys like me is that the comics that we grew up with are becoming increasingly less relevant.
Right.
Actually, theories as to why that is, but the superhero comics and even the licensed comics of large like movie properties and things like that, that kind of drove the direct market industry, were all niche, you know, genre things. And I think those have their audience, and it's not growing a ton right now. And mm-hmm. as that type of material is expanded out into movies and television and all that, that's become sort of the primary place. Movies and TV and animation have become the primary place where people go for that kind of fare, which means people are going more and more to graphic novels for things that aren't superhero.
Right.
And so that I think is really interesting as well. And, you know, on the one hand, you know, that's awesome because all this other genre will open up. On the other hand, you know, for those of us that are, you know, doing our careers currently in the comics industry, it's scary because you don't know what direction it's going to take. But it's scary and exciting at the same time.
Yeah, no, I can see that. There was when I put the original post on, I guess it was Twitter, someone suggested that they should start making books that fit with the trends that Hibbs was pointing out. And what I tried to point out is something that we talk about in Comics Connection all the time is it is probably a bad idea to make your book based on what the trend currently is now. Like, so especially if that's not a book that you are interested in making. It's not a book that you're passionate about making. If you try to make a Dog Man kind of knockoff because Dog Man sold 8.5 million copies, it's probably not going to go well. So if you don't like manga or you don't understand how manga works, it doesn't make sense for you to throw away the idea you had and then go try to make manga. It's a better idea to try to find your audience, knowing that, as Andy said, the market is expanding. We're not going to be stuck in the future in this kind of superhero first kind of paradigm. So if you have books that are another type of genre, the same way they've had in Europe and Asia for years, it looks like there's going to be more opportunity for that because you're going to have a new group of people who expect comics to not just be superheroes, or expect comics to not be superheroes at all. Because like you said, there's a lot of people, they know superheroes. Most people in America know superheroes, but they know it from the animation they watch. They know it from the movies. They know it from the video games. They know it from their t-shirts. They've never picked up a X-Men comic, but they know X-Men 97. They know, you know, there's a lot of things that people are familiar with but it's not comics. So I think we're going to be moving in that direction. But I wanted to kind of go a little bit deeper into this idea, because if a lot of people now are reading books that are graphic novel first, how do you think they will, in general, digest the idea of single issues? Is single issues something that's going to be more viable, or is that going to be a format that's not going to have as strong of a, yeah, it's not going to be as strong?
Right. You know, I feel like I'm not supposed to say this, as I'm supposed to be that, you know, that quote unquote expert, but I don't really know. Mm-hmm. What I can talk to a little bit is about sort of my own experience that, you know, when I started reading comics as a kid, I had two older brothers and they would share their comics and kind of walk me through them before I was really reading on my own. But I remember finding out that there were all of these older stories.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I remember kind of that realization. Oh, you just showed me this new Teen Titans comic. The number on the cover is 47. That means there's 46 other ones. That
mm-hmm.
And I want to go read those. And for me, that was exciting. That, like, right. Hey. And then even sort of there was like a whole treasure sort of aspect to it, because back then you couldn't just buy them all digitally or whatever. Like,
yes.
You had to actually go hunt back issues, go to convention, stuff like that. All of that became part of a community for me. And so mm-hmm. I think that single issue comics can still be viable, because some portion of this giant audience that we're talking about that's going to age into it, or age into more mature fare, will likely find that unique and interesting and also want to buy. Now, for them, it may be less, I want to buy single issue back issues, and they may just want to get, you know, a line of trade paperbacks. A lot of companies are doing that, where, you know, you can start at volume one of the X-Men and, you know, and read all these trade paperbacks and collect a lot of those. That's
mm-hmm.
that's fine. I'd say that's part of the same mentality. It's part of the same interest. But there is something to, you know, there's always sort of those first or early adapters, right?
Right.
It's sort of a similar idea to that. The people that want to read that issue the day it comes out. And part of that, if that becomes part of your community, that you're part of the people at the tip of the spear,
mm-hmm.
and you guys are in that together and talk about the comics as they're coming out and what's going to happen next, then I think that's viable, especially for those franchises that have that longevity, right? It gets more difficult, I think, when you're talking about just, you know, publishers like CEX, where we put out a miniseries. It's 4-5 issues or whatever, and then it's done and you're on to the next thing. The appeal of that, I think I struggle with more when you start talking about single issues. But mm-hmm. But yeah, for for titles that can carry that. You know, like there are people now that are hunting to try and complete their collection of the Walking Dead single issue of the Rand for 170 some odd issues. I forget. But
no, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's my take on it. I think it'll be a small segment, but it will probably be a large enough segment to make it viable in certain places.
That does make sense, especially when you consider like the people who are reading, who are aging into more adult comics now, also grew up with things like Netflix. Netflix has series that are limited, you know, four episodes, six episodes. So it's not going to be a totally foreign concept for the reader to understand. I do think because they may be more used to just from the books they're reading now to the books they'll read in the future, they'll expect more pages per volume, if that makes sense, because a lot of the books they're reading now are, you know, 128, 164 pages, whether they're reading the younger books or they're reading manga, where when you get them into a idea of, okay, single issues is 22 pages or 28 pages, and, you know, the price differential there, some of them may struggle with that, but I don't think the narrative concept is going to be something that's going to be difficult for them to grasp. The other point that I did want to touch on with you, especially as a comic creator, is that a very small percentage of the people who read comics, no matter what generation you're talking about, actually go on to make comics. So if you have, you know, potentially, let's say 4 million, 5 million new readers of comics in the next 10 to 15 years, you're now also talking about tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of new comic creators entering the market. So based on assuming the distribution channels stay the same, how do you see that playing out with the way books are sold, the way books are marketed, the way books are actually distributed, if there's so many more artists and writers and everybody else jumping in to the game?
Yeah, if the distribution channels stay the same, then I think you'll see more crowdfunded books.
Mm. Like,
that seems to be growing kind of immensely anyway.
Right.
And when something is successful in the crowdfunding space, then I think the publishers will start to go and either pick up that property or sort of try and cherry pick creators that they want to work with. But one of the things that's already happening is, as you know, sort of traditional comic publishers, and by that I mean, you know, your Marvel and your DC, the Dark Horses, are going and going, hey, this was really successful on Kickstarter or Zoop or wherever. And then they contact that creator. Creators are less interested in working for those companies.
Right.
And are more interested in doing their own thing, doing their own stuff that they own and they control. And so you're having what used to be the indie comics market was sort of the proving ground for getting into these other publishers so you can work on these characters you grew up reading.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I wouldn't say completely broken, but it's almost two different streams. So that is still happening to whatever degree, but then there are people who are equally good or better even who are not interested in going and doing that Marvel and DC work. And then they're just going off and doing their own thing. So what's happening is it used to be that the quality of those comics by those major publishers was fairly high in general compared to most indie comics.
Right.
And that's changing.
Mm-hmm.
So the quality levels are evening out. Which if I were one of those publishers, I'd find a little bit scary. But it's sort of, if Marvel wasn't owned by Disney and DC wasn't owned by Warner Brothers Discovery, then I would be surprised if they wouldn't have sort of their own imprints that are just creator-owned.
Right.
Because those are creators they can work with. But considering that they're owned by these giant corporations, that's not all.
Mm-hmm.
And it left space open for all these traditional publishers to break into the graphic novel space. And as the data shows, Scholastic is killing it in the book market.
Yes, especially since Scholastic only got into the graphic novel game, I think, in 2005. So it's less than 20 years. They've now, like, they're like 60, 70% of that market. It's insane.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, and when I was editing at IDW, I was the editor on the Transformers line, and we were going to relaunch the Transformers. And we talked about how, you know, that's a property that historically has appealed to kids on some level. Now, mm-hmm. We knew our readership in general was older, 20s and 30s, but we decided to take a shot and see if we could put together a project in the hopes that Scholastic would pick up a Transformers graphic novel and place a big order and distribute it in their book clubs and things.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that. We created this mini series for the character Bumblebee. It was just a Bumblebee sort of solo series.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very different from the other stuff we were producing. And we put it out in the direct market where all the Transformers comics go. And fans universally hated it. but it absolutely worked because we didn't make it for them. We made it for sort of the younger Scholastic audience. And Scholastic did, by the skin of our teeth, Scholastic did pick it up. And that became the highest selling Transformers comic that I worked on because Scholastic sold so many more copies of that book
mm-hmm.
than any other. And so that to me was like, I agree with you, like, don't chase the thing, like, don't chase, you know, like Dog Man, like, don't try to do Diet Dog Man,
right?
Or knock off Dog Man. But if you've got a story for the same audience or a very similar audience to Dog Man that you are passionate about, then that's a viable decision.
Oh, absolutely. If your characters and your story can be repositioned, or the story can be retold, or a different story can be told that appeals to that market, go for it. But if you're going to do it just to do it, and you're just going through the motions because you think you have to do it, I would advise against that. The last piece is what we're going to talk about the actual production of the books, because a lot of the books that the younger audiences are reading now are not being made by teams. They're being made by cartoonists. So, which means that the person who wrote the story also drew the story, also did the lettering, also, you know, handled almost all of the functions that a team does in a traditionally made comic. Do you feel like if there's a huge influx of new creators, are those creators going to switch over to the team model, so that one is a writer, one is the letterer, one is the, you know, artist and everything else? Or do you think there's going to be a huge shift to more and more cartoonists and people doing their, you know, the whole thing on their own, similar to what's done in like Europe?
I think there'll be a shift to more cartoonists.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, I mean, I think it's a shift of, you know, like a weight scale, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like right now, there's more teams doing it than there are cartoonists, but there are both right
yes.
now, obviously. And I think that the balance is shifting.
Mm-hmm.
That said, you know, I don't feel like if Dog Man were written by one person and drawn by another, that it would be selling this. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It may be, too, that one of the things that if there aren't a lot of cartoonists
mm-hmm.
who are coming up that way, you know, learning that way, but you have a lot of really good draftsmen, draftspeople, and you have a lot of decent writers, it may be that for production reasons, which is what happened originally, you know, it may be that teams, you know, don't fall off as much as we might expect. But I think it does have to do with the expectation of the audience. You know, I mean, one of the interesting things for me is, you know, they could bring back Calvin and Hobbes with one of the greatest creative teams of all time put together, but if it's not Bill Watterson, I'm not interested. So, you know, I think what we are going to see, though, is somebody like, you know, I could see somebody like Dave Pilkey, the Dog Man, becoming sort of the James Patterson of graphic novels.
Mm-hmm.
he could branch out and his name would help sell stuff. As long as the stuff that he puts out has a certain level of quality, it will sell with his name on it. Like I've been kind of waiting for that.
Yeah, the idea that he hasn't started his own publishing company is kind of bizarre. I don't know what he's waiting for, but that's fine. That's fine.
I think he's doing okay. You know, yeah. Like, I think maybe he's like, I'm good with the nice income I've got. You know, I mean, who knows? But I do think that my point there is that audience expectation would be to have one name at the top.
Right.
And then like some helpers.
Yeah, right. It could be a thing. It could be because we're seeing that right now because you have things like the books that like Robert Kirkman puts out. Kirkman writes it and he's like the publisher, but he brings in the artist, the letterer, the colorist, the editor, the everybody else, but it's still his name on top. So similar to your James Patterson comparison, that could be one of the things that happened because that actually does happen a lot in the manga space as well, where you have one principal creator who has a whole stable of, you know, support to get that right. creative production done. So yeah, okay.
I could also see studios becoming more studios set up where it's a collective or group of artists that are creating potentially more than one thing at a time, but they're constantly working together. And so you have sort of a studio Ghibli sort of a studio thing on it. A lot of different ways it could go. I don't have a crystal ball, but I'm really curious because I think the shift that we've started to see, you know, in the Hibbs article, he talks about like, hey, you know, there's this pandemic bump, and if you kind of pull out those 2 years, then this looks about normal. But I think there's more going on. I think if you dive deeper into those numbers, you're seeing some other things that are really intriguing, like they're and exciting for the industry. But one of the things that I have learned is that when an industry shifts, like has a pretty big shift, then the people who are doing well now get really nervous because not all of them will be doing well after the shift is complete.
Exactly.
And people who aren't doing well now but are kind of on the cutting edge of something may be the ones on top when the shift is complete. So the shift itself makes everyone nervous. And one of the things that I thought was interesting about Hibbs's analysis, because he's a retailer, he's not looking at it the way that I do as a publisher, because he has, and there are different ways that different businesses do this. So I'm not saying like this is absolutely unique to retailers, but retailers are more interested in, do we have books that overall across all the publishers are selling as well or better? Right. But the reality is if Scholastic takes off and becomes 50% of the market, then all and the market stays about the same dollar wise, then everybody else is selling less.
Yes.
And that is a shift that I see. Like as a publisher, I'm looking and going, hey, the slice of the pie that I'm selling into is getting smaller. So that's gonna have a very different effect on the publishers. They're gonna have to reinvent themselves too. And are they gonna reinvent themselves and, you know, just go into YA and early reader, or are they gonna, you know, go more niche and try and sell books in another area, or go digital, or who knows?
But
but it's fascinating. And exciting, which I feel like I need to keep saying it's exciting because it can be scary, but it can and should also be exciting.
Well, I think for listeners to this and the members of Comics Connection, one of the things that you have to realize, no matter what perspective you have on it, is that as you're making your book and as you're trying to grow your business, the industry is actually shifting under your feet. So the more you could actually be aware of and stay on top of what it is that's going on, the better positioned you will be to actually deal with the shift when it happens. Whether you're doing well now or you're trying to do well in the future, you kind of have to see what's going on. You can't make predictions. I mean, a few months ago, Andy, we made predictions that I'm sure are already wrong because I don't remember what we said. But
oh, they're so right.
Oh, there's okay. Well, that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Don't look at them. They're fine.
What we're going to try to keep doing is looking at how these trends are changing, having the discussions that we always have on Comics Connection in our Zooms and on our Discord, so that people who are interested in this kind of thing, because it's very interesting, can actually get the information they need and make the right decisions. So until the next time, I'm Gamal. Thank you, Andy. We will see you guys next time, and have fun with your comics.